Today on Maine Calling, the importance of eelgrass. Eelgrass, or seagrass, grows in tidal waters all over the world. Antarctica is the only continent without it. Eelgrass is so commonplace, it's easy to take for granted. However, it is essential to marine ecosystems, and it's in trouble. Every year, the world loses more and more of its eelgrass. A recent pilot program in Casco Bay showed that eelgrass habitat there has decreased by 54% in just 4 years. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will dive into the world of eelgrass. We'll find out why it's so important to fish, water quality, anti-erosion efforts, and the climate. And we'll learn what we can all do to help protect it. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling On Demand is made possible in part by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn how you can get involved at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. By Welch & Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth, from investments to trustee services, more at welchforbes.com. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, supporting Maine island communities through education, health, and community engagement. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. It is not something we pay much attention to, but eelgrass forms the foundation of the marine ecosystem. Today, we'll learn about this important seagrass, why it's declining, and what can be done to protect it. My guest, Angie Brewer, who is a biologist with the Maine Department of Environmental Protection, and Phil Colarusso, who is a marine biologist whose area of expertise is eelgrass. He is with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. We invite you to join the conversation. Have you thought twice about eelgrass? Have you noticed it declining in the area where you live? Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on social media or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. And just a reminder, our Maine Calling phone number is different than the one for Maine Public's membership drive. The Maine Calling number is 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to both of you, and thank you so much for joining us today. Phil, I'm going to start with you. I hear people call you Mr. Eelgrass, so I just want to ask you if you can start by giving us a primer. Eelgrass or seagrass is not seaweed, right? These are two different kinds of plants. Tell us, I think we all know what eelgrass is, especially people who live near the coast, but what makes it distinctive?
Yes, eelgrass is different from algae. It's a rooted, submerged aquatic plant. It actually frequently gets confused with salt marshes. So if the tide goes out and the plant flops over, it's seagrass. If the tide goes out and the plant stands up, it's salt marsh. But it's a flowering submerged aquatic plant that grows up and down the East Coast.
Okay, so we're talking about the plant that flops over when the tide goes out. It's everywhere in Maine, or it has been everywhere in Maine. But tell us why it's so important. I think if we think hard, we can think, well, it's probably a habitat for some creatures, but it's so much more than that, isn't it?
Yes, it performs a number of really important ecosystem functions. So first, like all plants, it photosynthesizes and produces oxygen. So it oxygenates the water, allowing for fish and other things to survive. It's an incredible important nursery habitat for many commercial species. So down here, further south, bay scallops, blue crabs, etc. Up in Maine and further north, cod, pollock, winter flounder are commonly found in these habitats. It's a primary producer, so it supports the coastal food chain. And it sequesters carbon. And this is something I've spent a lot of time studying recently. As a result, it's an important buffer to climate change. It also purifies the water by filtering particles and everything out of it as the tide goes in and out. And it's important for coastal resilience. The canopy of these meadows kind of dampen waves and reduce coastal erosion.
All right, Angie, I'm going to turn to you and looking at eelgrass specifically in Maine. I noticed I was on the internet poking around different government websites, pretty much everywhere up and down the coast of Maine. There are places where there's more than other places, but this is something that's essential pretty much from Eastport to Kittery.
That's very true. And you see a lot of eelgrass in areas where there's a very shallow slope. So embayments where you see a lot of exposed mudflats, for example, when the tide is out, that's really great habitat for eelgrass. So especially in Casco Bay, there are a lot of those places. But at least in the 1990s, it used to be that if you had a map with a layer of eelgrass distribution in the state, if you took the state away, you could see the outline of the coast, essentially, because the eelgrass formed that border of land and ocean. And over time, that's changing as our waters warm and the environment changes. But for the most part, eelgrass is distributed from Kittery all the way into Cobscot Bay, all the way to our Canadian border.
And Angie, I understand eelgrass is important to Maine's most important crop right now, which is lobster. Tell me about the relationship between eelgrass and lobster.
Sure. As Phil mentioned, eelgrass really does host a lot of species in their juvenile stages, including lobster. So he mentioned a lot of finfish, but invertebrates as well. So those organisms without backbones. So lobster, shrimp, snails, which you really conspicuously see along the shoreline, but yes, lobster. And you can see if you're scuba diving or even just snorkeling in shallow water around eelgrass beds, you can often see burrows in the substrate, in the sediment. Some of those belong to lobsters, some belong to crabs, but yes, lobsters do frequent eelgrass beds as well.
All right. Well, one of the reasons we're doing the program is because of a recent study that showed that eelgrass was declining really, really rapidly in Casco Bay. But Phil, worldwide, we're seeing a decline in eelgrass, correct? I saw a study from 2018 that was estimating the decline in eelgrass at 7% a year. Is that an accurate number? Has it increased or decreased since then?
Yeah, that's the number that people bandy about for seagrass globally. And I think the factoid that people tend to cite is we're losing about 2 football fields worth of seagrass every 30 minutes. Mm. I think here in the U.S. we're doing better than that. We're not, the decline isn't as rapid. We have fairly robust environmental protection programs. And so the decline in this resource, I think, is slower than that. But there's no question it's still a decline.
And what are the reasons for that? Is it the warming waters? Is it because of disease? Are there predators? What's happening?
Yeah, there's many different reasons. So in Maine, we have invasive green crabs, which cause a problem. They tend to uproot some of the meadows. We have water quality issues. These plants need to photosynthesize, so they need really clear water. And on top of that, we have climate change. So we have the Gulf of Maine is one of the fastest warming water bodies on the planet. These are cold water plants. And so when you start layering on these multiple stressors, it becomes very challenging for these plants to thrive.
I want to talk about the study that precipitated this program. Friends of Casco Bay found that between 2018 and 2022, Casco Bay lost 54% of its eelgrass beds. Such an alarming number. Angie, I want to know, is Casco Bay alone or are other parts of Maine also seeing such a precipitous decline?
Mm-hmm. Casco Bay has really extensive habitat, as I mentioned before. A lot of the 54% decline is resulting from beds that used to be really large and are either nearly gone or completely absent now. A lot of the eelgrass that still exists in Casco Bay is in waters that are facing the ocean, so they're really well flushed. They're probably colder. And where we're seeing it decline are those more protected areas closer to shore and also to where rivers discharge. So we're just learning about how that change over time is happening elsewhere in the state. Casco Bay is a pretty well-studied area in terms of where eelgrass lives and is distributed across that entire area. But the Maine DEP is actually mapping eelgrass throughout the state, and we're learning quite a bit in the last couple of years, but also in the next few years about where eelgrass has changed in terms of cover. Last year, the DEP mapped in the Midcoast region, so from Phippsburg east to Port Clyde, and found a 60% decline in eelgrass from the last time it was mapped. And granted, that was in 2005, so a lot of time had passed since the last mapping effort had happened. Really hard to know when the decline in eelgrass happened relative to that timeline. It could be the light environment has changed. So, as Phil mentioned, eelgrass requires a lot of light. It's possible that our estuaries are getting more turbid with river discharges, potentially more algae blooms, for example, in the water column. So we're learning a lot about how eelgrass distribution is changing very quickly over the next few years, and like I said, just the last couple of years. So it's hard to say that Casco Bay is sort of a bellwether for what's happening elsewhere, but we'll know that very soon.
And Angie, part of the reason you're mapping again is because of a law that was passed in 2021, right? Before that, there was not a state law to be mapping eelgrass regularly. So I'm guessing that you feel as though you're doing a lot of catching up.
Very true. So in the 1990s and 2000s, the Maine Department of Marine Resources mapped the entire coastline for eelgrass twice. So there was a really great baseline for the DEP to work with moving forward. But as I mentioned, a lot happens even in a 5-year period. For example, eelgrass can wax and wane naturally for many different reasons. And so moving forward, yes, we're definitely playing catch up, especially east of Casco Bay, and hoping to learn a lot in a very short period of time.
Phil, these are dramatic numbers, a 54% decline in Casco Bay, a 60% decline in the Phippsburg to Port Clyde area. I'm going to ask you the big question. What happens if eelgrass disappears? If the eelgrass disappears, what happens to our marine ecosystem?
Yeah, well, that has happened in the past. In the 1930s, there was a dramatic decline over the entire Atlantic Eastern Seaboard. 90% of eelgrass meadows disappeared due to a disease. The only meadows that remained were those in the lower part of rivers at lower salinity that the disease organism couldn't tolerate. So what happened was bay scallops dramatically declined. Brant geese populations almost crashed, and a species called the eelgrass limpet, which is kind of like a snail, actually went extinct. But the good news is nature has the ability to heal itself if we give it time and space. And a lot of those meadows recovered over time after the disease organism kind of waxed a little bit and waned. And so these numbers are certainly problematic and something to be worried about. But I don't want people to feel like there's no hope going forward either.
Ivy from Friends of Casco Bay wasn't able to call into today's program because she is out on the water, but she says, you can help us by becoming a water reporter. Volunteers who use an app to document and report the condition of eelgrass beds. Water reporters receive online and field training. So you can find out about that by going to the Friends of Casco Bay webpage. And I'm wondering, Andrew, what else would you advise people who are listening to this program and thinking, because this is what Maine Column listeners often want to know, what can I do? How can I help?
Yeah, absolutely. So eelgrass is a very sensitive organism and it lives very close to shore. So coastal landowners can do a lot to protect the water quality within the area of eelgrass beds. So reducing or eliminating fertilizer use is a really big one. Too much nitrogen in the environment can be harmful to eelgrass. The first symptom of too much nutrients, especially nitrogen in the water column, is growth of epiphytes. So these are plants that grow opportunistically in the eelgrass and they essentially make it difficult for the eelgrass to photosynthesize. So having less nutrients entering the water by using less fertilizers is really important. The same with pet waste, for example. You don't want, dog poop runoff going into the coastal waters. It's just not helpful at all for those areas. And also planting vegetative buffers is really helpful. So if there's a shoreline with a lawn going right down to the intertidal zone where there are rocks, having plants along that border at the lower portion of the upland really helps as well. So that's if you're a coastal landowner. So also raising awareness about the importance of eelgrass is really critical. It's helpful to just get your face in the water, put on a mask and snorkel, and just look at the beauty of the eelgrass beds in order to understand why they should be protected. For recreators on the shoreline that are in motorized boats, for example, keeping boats navigating within navigation corridors is really helpful because those are the deepest areas where eelgrass is less likely to exist. Running props through eelgrass beds is very damaging and can have long-term impacts on eelgrass. Also with moorings. So there are what is called a conservation mooring, which is different than a traditional mooring that has a mushroom anchor and a chain. A conservation mooring has typically a helical anchor, so the anchor is screwed into the substrate and it has a midwater line that floats, so it's not scouring the bottom where it can cause damage to eelgrass. So using that type of mooring is really helpful. Also, moving moorings out of eelgrass beds is also a way to avoid impacts on eelgrass. So those are probably the more tangible ways that people can really protect eelgrass. But the appreciation is a big part of it. Really getting out in the water, observing the eelgrass and the organisms that live in it can really help build that appreciation of how beautiful that system is.
Well, we are talking about eelgrass on Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Maine Calling is made possible by listener contributions, along with Maine State Music Theater, presenting Beautiful, the Carole King musical from August 7th through the 24th. Tickets at msmt.org. Cumberland Crossing, an active retirement community with access to ocean view at Falmouth's Care Continuum. CumberlandCrossingRC.com. And NextGen 529, Maine's education savings plan for all kinds of education, college, trade school, certificates, and more. NextGenForMe.com.
We're taking a quick break from this conversation on Maine Calling about eelgrass to for the second day of the Dirigo Pledge Drive, asking your support of Maine Calling and Maine Public Radio. The number to support Maine Calling, Maine Public Radio, 1-800-866-1475. I'm Luke Merkel, a part of our underwriting support team here at Maine Public Radio. I'm joined by reporter Nicole Grisco, and we're here to really ask you to take that next step and support the program that you love, Maine Calling, 1-800-866-1475.
Look, for me, this is kind of a classic Maine Calling episode, right? It's very Maine. This is a topic that's unique to us, and we're learning a lot. Listening to the program just now, I'm learning a lot about the decline in eelgrass, where it's most prevalent. I mean, these are the kinds of topics that you can only hear on Maine Public Radio and on a program like Maine Calling. So to show your support for that today, give us a call at 1-800-866-1475.
It's local reporting made by people from your community for your community. And it's always the issues that matter to Mainers. As you said, there's topics that educate you, that inspire you, and that just make you learn a little more about the world around you. In this case, eelgrass, such an important foundation of the marine ecosystem. And you, our listeners, are such an important foundation of the public media model. We would not be here if it wasn't for a listener like you who called in to a pledge drive like this and said, I care about this service and want to keep it strong for the state of Maine. The way you can do that is by calling 1-800-866-1475, or you can go to mainepublic.org and hit that red donate button.
And more than 75% of our funding for this nonprofit service comes from you, our listeners, and your donations, your contributions to continue this service and make it stronger than ever. So give us a call today, 1-800-866-1475. And Luke, we have a couple of different offers, some special things happening today. Tell us about that?
There we go. Keep the calls coming. Our volunteers in Portland are awaiting your call. We really appreciate it. We appreciate our volunteers and our callers. 1-800-866-1475. Nicole, I can't go finish this break without mentioning the Fiddlehead Sea Bag. If you go to mainepublic.org/donate and you go on there, you can see the sea bag. It is a locally made by a local designer, and it could be yours. $42 a month or a $500 annual donation, and we'll send you this exclusive sea bag as a way of saying thank you. It's designed by Maine artist Casey Everett of Hearth and Harrow. Hearth and Harrow in Camden, wonderful shop, excellent designs, The bandanas are a favorite of my wife. But this fiddlehead seabag, you do not want to miss out on this offer. Again, 1-800-866-1475. You can see pictures of it at mainpublic.org/donate.
I think this year's design for the seabag is one of my favorites. It's really, bright greens. It's perfect. It's perfectly Maine. So that could be yours today with a call, 1-800-866-1475 or at mainpublic.org. And thank you.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We are learning all about eelgrass, how it helps marine life, water quality, encountering climate change, and why it may be in peril in parts of Maine. With me, Phil Colarusso, who is a marine biologist with the U.S. EPA, and Angie Brewer, biologist with the Maine DEP. Share your comments and questions by email, talk@mainpublic.org. Comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Lots of numbers today, but today the phone number for Maine Calling, as always, 1-800-399-3566. I love this. You all will love. Just yesterday, we were talking about writers' homes on Maine Calling, and one of the writers' homes that's recently been restored is Edna St. Vincent Millay's childhood home in Rockland. And right now someone has sent in a poem by Edna St. Vincent Millay called Eelgrass, and it goes, "No matter what I say, all that I really love is the rain that flattens on the bay and the eelgrass in the cove, the jingle shells that lie and bleach at the tide line and the trace of higher tides along the beach. Nothing in this place." So eelgrass beloved for a long time. We're going to go to Beattie, who's calling from Camden. Hi, Beattie. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to mention, because people were asking if this is happening in other places than the Casco Bay, and it certainly is. Eelgrass is disappeared from duck trap in Lincolnville perhaps as much as a couple decades ago. And now even the rockweed isn't washing up. It's just leaves from the trees. So I don't know what that's about. Sears Island had more eelgrass around it before the, road access, which used to just be tidal. So the water washed through, in great amounts, and there was eelgrass on both sides. So the pocket on the north side, I believe, went a long time ago, and now with Sears Island being threatened again with wind farm maintenance, I think it's possible that the rest will go if that happens. And as you're saying, the fisheries depend on eelgrass for as nurseries.
Beattie, thank you so much for your call. Angie, is the next part of Maine that you're mapping further up the coast? You mentioned Phippsburg to Port Clyde. Are you headed up to the areas that Beattie's talking about next?
Indeed, that is the case. Penobscot Bay is being mapped this year for eelgrass distribution. The way that the mapping occurs is there is a fixed wing plane that essentially takes low tide imagery. And staff at DEP goes out in a boat with an underwater camera and does lines back and forth underwater, looking at the distribution of eelgrass compared to what they're seeing in that imagery. So, in fact, just last week, our staff were out doing that verification work on the western shore of Penobscot Bay, including Rockland. And I'm not sure if they've made it as far as Lincolnville, but that is definitely going to happen. So this comment is very timely. So yes, Penobscot Bay, we do expect, has changed quite a bit in terms of the eelgrass coverage. And I know there are a lot of topics right now that are of great public interest, including the Sears Island proposal for a wind terminal, as well as aquaculture facilities that are proposed to be constructed. So yes, it is time to know what's happening in Penobscot Bay, and that work is being done this summer. The information about the distribution should be available publicly this winter sometime.
That's interesting. You mentioned proposed aquaculture facilities and aquaculture farms. Angie, if there is a eelgrass meadow somewhere, does that make it off limits for something like a seaweed farm or an oyster farm?
So aquaculture in that respect, so shellfish and macroalgae are a bit different in the way that agencies would be considering eelgrass impacts. So often there can be beneficial impacts between shellfish aquaculture, seaweed aquaculture, and eelgrass, such that they can coexist in harmony if those facilities are being operated in a responsible way. Shellfish can actually remove some of the particles from the water column that would otherwise be clouding the water for eelgrass to survive. So there can be some beneficial relationships there. Eelgrass also has the capability of improving the oxygen within the water column that can help the shellfish and the macroalgae respire. So there can be some good relationships there. Those types of aquaculture are regulated by the Department of Marine Resources, and they do definitely consider eelgrass distribution before issuing leases for those areas.
And Phil, I wanted to ask you, as Maine looks at this issue and plans for the future and agencies try to work together to protect eelgrass, are there any lessons from other places in the country or in the world that you would like to share and you would like to, Maine to sort of learn from? Any bad practices or good practices that are important to keep in mind?
I'm glad you quoted a poet. I'm going to quote John Steinbeck, one of my favorite authors, who said, "Nothing really exists until it's on a map." And I think it's really critical, and it's great that, and Angie was really one of the main forces behind getting the mapping program restarted in Maine. To do that, that work on a frequent basis is critical for the preservation and conservation of this resource. If other locations are mapping their seagrasses on an annual or biannual basis, so that they have a really good sense of trend and how things may be changing on a very short time period, that gives us a better ability to manage the resource. So I think the mapping program in Maine is so critical to the future of eelgrass in Maine.
We'll go to Bob, who's calling from Perry. Hi, Bob. Go ahead.
Hi. I was over in Madagascar a few years ago, and the tide went out real far, like a quarter of a mile or so. I saw ladies bent over and hitting the surface of the shore. So I went to investigate to see what they were doing, and they were clubbing eels in eelgrass. And I, as a fish biologist, I never knew how eelgrass got its name. But the eels reside in the eelgrass there, and the ladies, you know, find them and club them and harvest them, put them in a bucket. And to me, that's very interesting. I hope sharing it is also interesting.
Bob, thanks so much for calling in. It is a great tidbit. Why is it called eelgrass and not seagrass? So there you go. Phil, anything to add to that?
Well, I have my own eel story to compare with Bob's. So I actually have given plenty of talks, and some of them have been entitled "Eelgrass, Not Just for Eels Anymore." And I think I've been diving in eelgrass for the better part of 35 years at this point. And I have to say, I've only seen eels in eelgrass a handful of times. But it's always a treat because they don't have great eyesight, and they will come up and they'll be right in your mask. They'll come mask to snout to check you out. And as a child growing up and just outside of Boston, I did a lot of snorkeling in a tide pool. And day after day, this eel would come out from under a rock and check me out on a daily basis. So I felt like I had a friend in this tide pool. I'm not sure exactly why eelgrass is called eelgrass. I've been asked this question many times, and I really don't have an answer to that.
Bob, thanks so much for calling and sharing your experience. On the line with us now is Devin Domeyer. She is a coastal resiliency specialist with the Maine Department of Marine Resources. Thank you so much for calling in, Devin.
Thank you so much for having me.
I understand that you are involved with efforts to counter the eelgrass decline. What are you observing and what are you doing? How are you trying to change the situation?
Yeah, so I work for the Maine Coastal Program, and we're a partnership among local, regional, and state agencies to manage Maine's coastal resources for the public benefit. And right now we are administered by the Department of Marine Resources. But we sit in that really interesting spot of being able to bring together networks. So right now we're primarily supporting bringing eelgrass back by supporting this mapping and monitoring of eelgrass that Phil and Angie have been talking about. Because before we can restore eelgrass, we really need to understand the stressors. We really need to understand the abiotic and the biotic environmental conditions of the eelgrass in different places along the coast, because they're so tied to the changes in those environments. So before we can undertake any large restoration efforts, we need to really understand the environments in which we want to restore.
Devin, I want to ask you, Ivy with Friends of Casco Bay was encouraging people in the Casco Bay area to become part of their program, to be a water reporter. I'm wondering if you can tell us about some other ways people can get involved to help protect eelgrass.
Yeah, for sure. And I think Angie pointed out a lot of really good ones, as did Phil. The three major stressors that we know affect eelgrass, just because of research in Maine, but also all down the eastern seaboard and globally, are these invasive green crabs, fertilizer runoff that can decrease light availability in the water column, and eelgrass need that to photosynthesize. So one of the best things that I would tell people to do is those land use practices, the best management practices for your land. So reduce runoff as much as possible, reduce nutrient on your lawn as much as possible. So if you want to fertilize your garden or your lawn, just try and do so when you know that your grass or your garden is actively growing, so that your roots can absorb as much of that fertilizer as possible. Try and reduce the open land between your garden and the ocean. So as Angie mentioned, plant some buffers. A lot of native Maine plants have really deep root systems. That's great for reducing that runoff into the ocean. And then try not to apply fertilizer before really windy or rainy days. And I know that's hard to do in Maine often, but just those small choices can really actually benefit your local environment and see gains for eelgrass conservation. And then, I mean, green crabs are really invasive in Maine. They're bad for eelgrass, as Phil mentioned, because they can uproot them when they're looking for food. But they're also outcompeting other really important species in the Gulf of Maine, like lobsters. So you don't actually need a license from DMR to harvest green crabs for personal use. And you can eat them. There's a lot of really cool recipes online for eating green crabs whole. You can fry them whole and eat them as a soft shell crab. Manomet puts out some really great recipes for that. You can also use them for fertilizer, green crabs. If you catch them, make sure you kill them so they don't just wander around your lawn or go back to the ocean. But you can actually put them in your gardens as a natural organic fertilizer. And you can also feed them to your chickens. If they're under about 2 centimeters, chickens will outright eat them. So lots of really interesting solutions for that invasive problem to protect eelgrass.
And Devin, I want to go back to something you said about use of fertilizers. Are you talking just about people who are living right on the coast? Or are you talking about people who live within a certain number of feet or miles of the coast?
It's a really good question, because the coast doesn't just have to be that rocky coastline that we know of Maine. The coast is our tidal rivers as well. The coast is the watershed that will drain into small streams, which will drain into larger rivers, which will eventually make its way to the ocean. So if you know that you live on a tidal river, if you know that you live on a watershed that flushes very regularly into the ocean, it's really important for you to consider these best management practices for fertilizer as well. And that's for eelgrass, but also, you know, there's other reasons to limit your fertilizer use for runoff, even if you live on a Great Lake in Maine as well.
All right. Well, Devin, I really appreciate you calling in. Devin Dohmeyer is with Maine DMR's Coastal Program. And we'll be sure and put a whole lot of the tips. I saw that, Angie, you've produced a really nice fact sheet about being helpful for restoring eelgrass, and we will be putting that in our Maine Calling newsletter. We are talking about eelgrass on Maine Calling today. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. If you're very quick, you can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or find us on Facebook or Instagram. The number for Maine Calling, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
Community support is what makes Maine Calling possible, together with Maine Community Foundation, built by Maine for Maine, committed to investing in what's next. Find out more at mainecf.org. Bernstein Scher, a law firm that helps businesses address the challenges of climate change. Learn more at bernsteinscher.com. And Maine Farmland Trust, inviting you to explore Maine's farming community this summer with a visit to your local farm. MaineFarmlandTrust.org/summer.
And you are listening to Maine Public Radio, and we are in day two of our Dirigo Pledge Drive. My name is Nicola Grisco. I'm a reporter here with Maine Public, and I'm joined with my colleague Luke Merkel. And we're just taking a few minutes from Maine Calling to ask for your support. Please give us a call, 1-800-866-1475. Tell us why you support this program, why you support Maine Public Radio, and show your support today, 1-800-866-1475.
Yeah, Nicole, we call it the Dirigo Pledge Drive. Dirigo is Latin. It means I lead. And so we're asking you to be a leader for your community and to donate to your public radio station today so that it can be free over the air to everyone in your community throughout Maine. The number to do that is 1-800-866-1475. And we have two leaders from the county who have agreed to match any gifts made from Aroostook, Piscataquis, Penobscot, or Washington counties. So if you live in those counties and you're listening to Maine Calling, this is the perfect opportunity. Your gift is getting matched with that four-county match. So thank you to those two anonymous donors for stepping up. 1-800-866-1475. You can also make your gift at mainepublic.org/donate.
And look, we're listening to Maine Calling. The episode today is about eelgrass. We're learning all kinds of really interesting tidbits about eelgrass, green crabs, things we did not know before. And that's the kind of thing that you can rely on public radio for, to teach you something new, to maybe inspire you, to convene people from all over the state of Maine. You know, this is a big state, and we, Maine Calling brings people together from all over the place to talk about different topics, things that are important to you, or, you know, teach you something again that you didn't know before. So won't you show us your support today by giving us a call, 1-800-866-1475, or you can head online to mainepublic.org.
Yeah, Nicole, this episode makes me think about how every bed of eelgrass helps provide this beneficial marine ecosystem that a lot of us haven't even considered how all the different benefits. And every individual gift made to Maine Public Radio helps contribute to this really strong public radio station for a really big state. So having 7 FM signals that can reach so many people free over the air is just so critical in a lot of the work that you do, Nicole, as a reporter, providing, context, providing factual reporting is just so incredibly important. And, you know, we do drives like this to remind you why it's important and to ask for your support. So please be the next caller at 1-800-866-1475.
And your support allows our news team to travel around to this great state to meet different people, to find different stories. And it is a big state. It's difficult to do that. It requires resources. And so won't you show your support today for that service, for the news and information that you rely on here at Maine Public? 1-800-866-1475 is the number to call to show your support today. Or you can go online to mainepublic.org and make a donation in that way too. And thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. And our topic today, as Luke and Nicole mentioned, the foundational importance of eelgrass. My guests today, Angie Brewer with Maine DEP and Phil Colarusso with the U.S. EPA, also known as Mr. Eelgrass. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or post to our Facebook page or Instagram. Again, the number for Maine Calling, 1-800-399-3566. Phil, I want to go back to something we said very briefly at the beginning of the program, and that is the role of eelgrass in carbon sequestration and in mitigating some of the terrible impact of carbon in our atmosphere. Is this something we understand fully? And even if we don't, what do we understand about how much of a role eelgrass plays in sequestering carbon?
Yeah, so I think this is a fairly new area of research. People have really been focusing on it probably for the last decade or so. If we think about how these meadows function, the tide goes in, the tide goes out. Particles in the water column get washed through this canopy and they get filtered out of the water column and they settle into the sediments. And we, to measure carbon sequestration in these habitats, we take cores in the sediments in these meadows, and then we measure the amount of carbon. And we're finding that these meadows collect a lot of carbon, but more importantly, they hold on to it for decades to centuries. As long as the meadows stay intact, that carbon stays sequestered. It's out of the carbon cycle. It's not further contributing to climate change. And I think the factoid that a lot of people like to cite is, of all the carbon sequestered in the oceans, seagrasses account for about 10%, but from a surface area perspective, they only account for 0.01%. So they are disproportionately important to this process.
Are there other ways in which we think about climate change and eelgrass? Is carbon sequestration the only way in which it's part of the equation?
Yeah, so a lot of research now is going on into how can we make these habitats more resilient in the face of climate change? We know that water temperatures are increasing, and we know this is a cold water plant that's very thermally sensitive. So how do we go about helping these populations be more resilient to these predicted changes in the future? And one of the things that people are looking at is something called assisted migration. So eelgrass persists from Virginia to Maine in the U.S. on this coast. So there are populations on the southern edge of the range that are experiencing much warmer temperatures than we do in Maine. And they've evolved over millennia to be able to handle the thermal regime. And so people are now looking at the possibility of moving seeds from southern populations, which may be more thermally tolerant, to northern locations. As a way to kind of mitigate or combat these predicted changes in water temperature.
So maybe seeds of a Virginia eelgrass up to Maine because it might be able to handle the warming climate. We're going to go to Zion, who's calling from Green. Hi, Zion. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I was wondering, I'm up here in Green, sort of near the Androscoggin, which goes out into the ocean. And you mentioned steps like not doing manure on rainy or windy days. Where I'm not right on the river, but the river is somewhat nearby. Would that be a concern?
Angie.
So Green is pretty far upstream of marine waters, so fortunately in this case. However, all waters run to the ocean, to the estuaries and then to the ocean. So on the way, they are diluted pretty heavily. There's a lot of water volume within our estuaries, and especially as the outer coast is reached. So activities like that are probably not going to have an impact on eelgrass, which really lives in salty waters. Eelgrass really lives on high salinity waters like you'd see out in the Gulf of Maine. So, but it is really important to remember that, any material or nutrients, for example, that flow into rivers and streams eventually make their way to the ocean as well. So yes, great question.
And Angie, I'm going to follow up on Zion's question. He was asking about using manure, but some people use chemical fertilizers on their lawns, maybe have a lawn service. Is that different, or are both going to contribute nitrogen and should be used sparingly?
So chemicals other than nutrients are not going to be as directly impactful to eelgrass. Eelgrass can actually sequester some of those compounds. But generally, they won't have that direct impact that nutrients will. And nitrogen really is the compound that is most lacking in the waters where eelgrass lives. And so their addition can be, it can provide a really strong response in those epiphytes, as I mentioned.
All right. Well, Zion, thanks for your question. We will go up to Brooklyn and David. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, good. I'm involved with a group that's concerned about the maintenance and the long-term conservation of rockweed. Now, I think it's great that you're focused today on eelgrass, but I wanted to make a connection between the intertidal rockweed forests and the subtidal eelgrass. All of these habitats that we have along the coast are interconnected and interrelated, and problems with one are going to affect problems with the others as well. And we're working at trying to heighten conservation programs for the rockweed, and it could very well affect eelgrass as well. I just wanted to point that out.
Thanks. David, thanks for your call. Angie is nodding as you talk. Angie, talk about what we know about, you know, saving rockweed and saving eelgrass.
So these habitats are adjacent, and their connectivity, as the caller mentioned, is really important. So eelgrass often lives in water just deeper than rockweed or even salt marshes, intertidal flats that are used for harvesting clams, for example. So all of these habitats are definitely connected, and protection of one is critical for protecting the adjacent habitat as well.
Thanks for your call. Go to a post from Rob on Facebook, a comment. How is the state of Maine going to restore eelgrass? I am restoring eelgrass in Connecticut and New York. Would love to see this method trialed in Maine. So I don't know what method Rob is talking about. We did hear Phil talking about the whole idea of moving seeds. Angie, I wanted to ask you, are there any efforts going on to not just map and monitor, but also actually restore eelgrass?
So first and foremost, there are a couple of ways to restore eelgrass. With, you know, human mediated methods. So one is seeding. So the distribution of seeds that can essentially germinate on their own and become reestablished. The other way is by transplanting, mature plants. And so they can actually be removed from a donor location and then transplanted in another location where the sediment and the water column and the biological community are supportive or presumed to be supportive of that growth. It is difficult to do so. Success is not guaranteed with seeding or transplanting whole organisms, but it is very labor intensive, and it can be very successful if all the conditions are correct. There have been pilot studies in Maine that have done transplanting, looking at planting of whole organisms and the success of different methods. Currently, there are no large restoration efforts in process, but there are plans to try some seeding pilot work. There's a group in the Portland area called Team Zostra that is currently looking at viability of seeds when they are harvested from eelgrass within Casco Bay. So viability after storage within flowing seawater tanks, and then how viable will those seeds be when they're distributed in the environment. And that work is ongoing right now, and they're hopefully a pilot study in terms of getting the seeds in bags potentially and in the water as soon as this fall in September.
All right, Phil, anything to add to that? Any places where you've seen great success?
Yeah, the place that people most point to is coastal waters in Virginia, where Bob Orth of the Virginia Institute of Marine Science was just broadcasting 1 million seeds a year for a decade. And they restored thousands of acres as a result. And I think that's really the scale that we need to strive to get to here in the Northeast. Many of our restoration attempts, either with adult shoots or with seeding, have been relatively small scale because, as Angie, you know, correctly pointed out, they're very labor intensive. And so it's hard to do this at large scale. But with seeding, the labor involved is less than adult shoot transplanting, and the infrastructure needed is more manageable, and the costs are less as a result. So Team Zostra is trying to pilot. Others throughout New England are also pursuing seeding as a restoration option. And there's a large network of people who are kind of working on this issue. And And I'm actually familiar with Rob. Rob's
That's great. I got to cut you off, Phil. I have to go. Thank you so much, Phil Colarusso with the US EPA and Angie Brewer with the Maine Department of Environmental Protection. This is Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.
Maine Calling is made possible by your support, along with Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance, connecting literary professionals of all abilities with classes, scholarships, events, and community. MaineWriters.org. Eastern Basements, a division of Maine-owned Eastern Mold Remediation, offering basement waterproofing solutions. EasternBasements.com. And MEMIC, whose mission is to help Maine workers' comp work better through dedication to workforce safety, effective injury management, and agency partnerships. Learn more at MEMIC.com.
This is listener-supported Maine Public Radio. My name is Luke Merkel. I'm joined in studio by reporter Nicola Grisco. We've got a room full of volunteers here ready to take your calls. We just got lunch, which is great news, from Market Street Eats. So thank you to Market Street Eats on Market Street in Portland. They provide wonderful wraps, so it's just great vibe in here. And the number to call, 1-800-866-1475. You know, Nicole, listening to this Maine Calling, you're inspired to kind of think more about eelgrass. You're inspired to kind of think about how we can protect eelgrass. And we're here today to ask you, the listeners, to help protect public radio in Maine. And the way to protect that is to donate and show your support. 1-800-866-1475.
Look, you know, Maine Calling is one of those programs that, you know, it teaches you something new, but it might inspire you as well. I got a note just this morning, actually, from Maine Calling producer Cindy Hahn, and she was running an idea by me, and she mentioned someone who listened to a Maine Calling episode and was inspired to try something completely new, potentially a new kind of business opportunity to change the way they work and what they do here in Maine. And they were inspired to do that because of an episode they heard of Maine Calling. And I'm sure you all have been inspired in a similar way, maybe not to that quite that scope, but because, you know, Maine Calling and Maine Public Radio inspires you, teaches you something new, won't you call us today, 1-800-866-1475. Or you can go online to mainepublic.org.
Yeah, and Nicole, the way I give is as an Evergreen friend. And so being an Evergreen friend is just such an easy way to give, and it's an important way to give, because each and every month an amount comes out of your bank account or your credit card, and it's intentional monthly giving, because every time you turn on that radio, every time you listen to Maine Calling or Here and Now, you kind of have that warm feeling knowing that you help make that program possible. So please, be our next Evergreen friend. It's so easy to sign up, $10 a month, $15 a month, adding on to your current Evergreen donation, $2, extra $2, $4. Every gift counts. So please call now, 1-800-866-1475.
And we do have an incentive, a kind of thank you gift if you make a contribution today to Maine Public. It's our summer sea bag. And this year it is a fiddlehead design. I really love this one. I love the bright green colors. It was designed by Maine artist Casey Everett. And that sea bag can become yours today for a donation of $42 a month or $500 annually. The number to call to make that contribution is 1-800-866-1475, or you can go online to mainepublic.org.
And Nicole, yeah, while you're on mainepublic.org, you can see that sea bag. You can see other thank you gifts at different levels. You know, I got to say, as someone who's been here a while, the swag, the T-shirts, the mugs, the hats, the designs have gotten so much better and so great. And it's worth checking out just for that. It's making a gift just to show your pride in your public radio station. So call because you love Maine Public Radio. Call because you want to get something that'll have a public display of how much you love it. 1-800-866-1475. Again, mainepublic.org/donate.
And the sea bag, the other kinds of thank you gifts, they're a reminder of why you support this service. It's a statewide service. It takes a lot of time and effort to do the kinds of in-depth and well-researched stories that we try to do here on the news team. So Won't you make your contribution today? 1-800-866-1475 or online at mainepublic.org. And you know, we have the CBAG as an incentive, but really whatever level is comfortable for you, that's okay with us. And you can make that contribution today. 1-800-866-1475.